You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer, and if you are a regular listener to this program, you probably know that I like to talk a lot about something I call, everybody calls, in fact, direct response marketing. It's a means of being able to track exactly what message you're putting out there in the market and whether it's working on getting people into your business, saying, you know, raising their hand and saying, I'm interested in what you have to offer. And I will once in a while make fun of or complain about this other end of the spectrum in the advertising world, the one we refer to as Madison Avenue, the guys who we say are really interested in patting themselves on the backs and, you know, winning awards and that's it. But in fact, I have somebody here who probably is going to speak up in defense of that end of the marketing world, because there's actually some real important value to those elements in marketing as well. And since I know very little about it, we thought we would have Chris Ritter, who is the co-founder and the chief creative officer over at a creative agency known as C90, to come on and teach me a little bit and hopefully teach you as well a little bit about the world of the creative end of marketing. Chris, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
All right. I hope I didn't offend you too much with that intro, but it's the way that I have often seen the marketing world. And, you know, if we talk about the creativity that happens in brand marketing, some of it is somewhat bizarre and difficult to wrap your head around. Some of it is highly effective. And so, you know, we sort of paint broad brushstrokes around, you know, it's good or bad. And I don't mean to suggest that it's bad by any means, but like any marketing, including marketing that's direct response marketing, sometimes it's not very effective.
Yeah. I mean, I find, you know, we like to say something, because we see it as being actually really complementary of each other.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, if you look at like the traditional, say, marketing funnel, you know, as an example of, you know, kind of a model of where we really fit together, you're further down the, you know, the funnel. So we talk a lot about interest, because once a client or a customer or a consumer of some sort has interest, they need those direct responses. They need the email marketing. They need the, you know, the things that are going to get them over the hump to purchase. Right. But what we really specialize in is getting interest, you know, which is a very difficult thing to do, because people are, you know, bombarded with so many messages all the time. You really have to stand out. And there's only a few different ways to do it. You know, we like to say, you know, if you're not interesting, you're just irrelevant. Because if you don't have interest or you don't gain interest, you can't sell anybody anything. So it's very important to get that, you know, that top level, which is awareness, and get people excited about your brand and gain interest, so that, you know, people like yourself can be more effective, actually.
Totally. And you know, it makes total sense. If we go back, you know, late 19th century, there was this concept that was created or identified called ADA, A-D-I-A, or A, yes, A-I-D-A, excuse me. The very first part of that formula is attention.
How would you like to become part of the More Perfect Marketing family? You can when you join our free online community, More Perfect Marketers. Inside, you'll get access to our collection of marketing cheat sheets to help you streamline your business growth, as well as the videos from David's Niche Challenge, which will teach you the counterintuitive approach to selling more by focusing on a narrower audience. To join for free, please visit mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. Now, back to the show.
Right. So you're working on capturing the attention and then getting people interested in, okay, what is this brand all about? Or is this brand a fit for me? Or I want to learn more. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's precisely what I'm saying. We like to, use a little bit of different terminology because it's always goes from, imagine your, audience is completely unaware of you or your brand or product or whatever. We have to gain awareness. And then once we gain awareness, we have to get interest. Mm-hmm. That's the world that we live in. And then, it funnels obviously down to purchase, but yeah, we're talking the same language.
So, I'm thinking about this in terms of the types of businesses where this applies in an obvious manner and those where it applies, but perhaps less obvious. So if we were talking before I hit record about some recognizable national or international brands, that obviously this makes a lot of sense because we want to indoctrinate the public into thinking about that brand whenever they think about, that product type or that category. But I'm imagining that it doesn't stop at large enterprise businesses.
Oh, definitely not. I one of our big business sectors that we go after is startups, mm-hmm. for example. So, whenever you have a brand problem, there's only a certain amount of, ways that branding is actually a good solution for you. One of them is that you have nothing mm-hmm. at all. So a lot of times when you're talking about startup, it's, it's an idea. It's in its infancy. It needs to change. Maybe you're a couple of years old and you just got funding, but you need to kind of change, what you're really all about. It's up to us to take that sort of, the ideas that really drive your company, drive your customers, drive culture, and translate that into something that is, eye-catching, beautiful, and relatable, to everybody. So, you have startups. Another reason is, you have a problem, you have a problem. Maybe you're just not converting, to a new audience segment or maybe, there was a crisis, with the brand, mm-hmm. I worked with, Livestrong, years ago, right after the Lance Armstrong scandal. So at the time, everybody was very familiar with, the yellow bracelets mm-hmm. and, very familiar with Livestrong as a consumer brand, but nobody actually knew, what the mission of the nonprofit actually was. And that's navigating, cancer patients through all their treatment, which is a much different, much richer story. And that's where they really had to do a strategic rebrand. We were instrumental and part of that process, on that particular project. And, we had to think of something really different. And that's where, you have to find new ways to really relate with people. And in that case, regain their interest.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's go back to the startup concept because I'm sort of curious about how the process works. And with a startup, you're not dealing with the public's existing awareness of a brand. Right. And so there's probably a series of things that you need to consider in order to sort of figure out what you're going to do visually, what you're going to do messaging wise, what you're going to do in terms of where they're communicating all of this. How do you work through that process?
Yeah, it's really starts on a very high level. We ask questions that are, it almost seems too high level, right? Right. So, we have to, really think about what is their business? Why does this business even exist? Why do we put them there? And really look at the company and what say, why are you here for consumers and what makes you special? What do you do well? What do you maybe not do well? Then you have to look at, their customer base. Who are we going after? Who's this message even for? Who cares? Mm-hmm. Why would they care? Then you look at, their competition. It doesn't matter if you're brand new in a category. You're always competing with people's dollars. So we have to do something that is different than what everybody else is doing to gain their attention or at least not confuse people. Mm-hmm. And lastly, and this is where I think a lot of the really interesting concepts come, is looking at culture. Where do you fit in culture? What are cultural trends that we know is going on a macro scale that is relevant to who you are and what you are, the message that you're trying to put out to the public and get people interested?
So, you know, I'm thinking about this, and we were talking earlier, before we started the interview about, the college that I went to. I know that you've done work with, at least in one other college that I see on your website, Northern Michigan University. Things that might be happening around the world or in the consciousness of the audience that, you know, that school is trying to get in front of, maybe position themselves in a certain way visually or the positioning in terms of what their strengths are, or that they are relevant, you know, or that they're perhaps still relevant, you know, what is the thinking that you sort of have to go through in developing? And I was, you know, perhaps using that one as a specific example, but if that's not a good one, you want to guide us through one that is a little bit more tangible.
Yeah, that's actually a really good example. So you're talking about Northern Michigan University, you know, NMU, GSNR branding that we just launched. And, you know, Northern Michigan University is a really unique college, and a lot of it really has to do with their geographic location. It is in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Mm-hmm. It is on the coast of Lake Superior, and it is gorgeous. It is, you know, a very, very beautiful natural setting. But it's also 3 hours away from a city with 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. It's very remote, and it is cold and snowy. It gets about 150 inches of snow in Marquette, where it is every single year. So we had to really relate, you know, to, you know, this unique situation that they have, and who's going to want to do that? You know, who's going to, like, because it's a hurdle. We did some interviews with some of their current students, undergrad and graduate, and they, you know, told us very plain and clear, if you're from a southern state like Georgia and you're not used to snow, it's going to be a problem, you know, or, you know, if you really don't like winters, it's going to be a problem. So that's obviously a hurdle that we had to get through. So one of the things that we did some research on and really started to think about, well, how could this be beneficial for somebody? And the remoteness was the thing that really came forward. You know, one of the things that really came forward for us. So, you know, people, as you probably know, are as stressed out as ever. You know, depression is a huge thing, you know, across the United States workforce, and particularly in students, and even more particularly in graduate students, which is who we're trying to attract. Yep. So when you kind of put that all together, the idea of, you know, leaving the rat race, because a lot of these people are already professionals, to go to a remote location that is pristine wilderness, to take the time and learn something new that's going to benefit themselves personally, is a really relevant message for these people. And that was one of the places that we landed and just said, okay, well, if you're going to do something that, you know, allows you to be pure in thought, and eliminate all the distractions of, you know, the workplace or the busy city, this is the place for you. So that's a, you know, that's a really clear way that we can, you know, connect, you know, what some people might even see as an issue or a problem, and turn it into a positive that's actually going to attract people to go there. So, we actually wrote some headlines for them, you know, say that, you know, people come here for the unlimited headspace, which seems like a really peaceful place, for people to go and get educated and learn new things. So, that's just one example, right?
And I'm looking at it on your website now. There's a very strong visual that's accompanying that text that you just mentioned. I don't know if you recall what it is, but it looks to me like right up against the shore, quite icy texture to it. So really gives a feel for what, you know, whether that's actually that location or just sort of a suggestion of what, you know, the interpretation of somebody, you know, might be thinking about that environment when they look at this image. How did you come up with the way that you were going to express this visually?
Well, I mean, I think it's a really accurate representation, first off, of what you're going to experience while you're there. And, you know, when you're doing design work, you always have to think of, you know, what's an authentic message? You know, what's something that we can actually be, you know, say authentically in a way that is true to ourselves, And I think that's an image that really tells you it's cold here. You know, it's beautiful. I mean, that's a very, very peaceful image that you're referencing. You know, it's like almost infinite, you know, infinite peacefulness all the way to the horizon. And, you know, maybe there's a couple of fluffy clouds in there. But, you know, that idea of the sereneness of that, I think is really indicative of what the experience you're going to get, you know, getting an education in Northern Michigan is going to be like.
Yeah, totally. I'm now fascinated by it. And now I have to go to the UP to discover it myself. So cool. So I'm thinking a little bit about the types of businesses that I tend to work with, which are, you know, small local businesses, and how this stuff that we've been talking about applies to sort of the, you know, the average business that's focusing on a local market, and they're not necessarily thinking about, you know, having big billboards and all of the types of, you know, big brand stuff that, you know, Coca-Cola or Budweiser has a budget for and local businesses don't. How does this apply to a smaller, more focused business?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually, because a lot of times when you think of awareness and you mention like Coca-Cola, right, they spend almost all of their money on awareness, because all you really need to do is say Coca-Cola. And now suddenly it's like, you know, I want a red can in my hand, right? You know, and, you know, obviously if you are, you know, a mom and pop boutique, you know, maybe a fashion boutique or something like that, you're never going to have that luxury, you know, of having that amount of awareness. So, you know, what you do is you isolate your audience, you know, so who are you actually trying to get in front of? You know, Coke is trying to essentially market to the entire world, you know, so their audience is 8 billion people. Your audience only need to be 100,000.
There's another company that I think you've worked with. You've worked with my neighbors down the road, Nike. And I remember a friend of mine who worked there told me one day that one of their stated goals to all of their employees is to make sure that at least once a day, everybody on the planet sees the Nike swoosh.
That's an interesting one. I haven't heard that one before, actually, but that, you know, that's a legitimate goal for a large company. And, you know, once you get brand awareness, and Nike is a great example of this. Once you get kind of saturation, you can use your brand to support, you know, different things. You know, most people have seen the campaigns around Colin Kaepernick or Serena Williams, you know, for example. Not every brand even has that opportunity to do that. Yeah. And, you know, some people, you know, especially with the Kaepernick campaign, said, hey, maybe Nike's not the brand for me. And Nike was comfortable doing it because they have, you know, the values of the company that they really believe in. So, you know, when you have that awareness, it actually kind of puts you into a leadership, you know, kind of situation where, you know, you can be a part of the cultural zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I interrupted you. You were starting to talk a little bit about the mom and pop and about the focused or narrowed target. How do you do that effectively?
Right. So, I mean, the medium just changes. You know, so, I mean, obviously you're not going to be doing a worldwide, you know, billboard campaign, or, you know, you're not going to be on the, you know, pages of the New York Times or whatever, if you're a small mom and pop shop. So, you know, what do you do to make yourself really attractive, you know, on a smaller scale? You know, perhaps it is getting people interested on Instagram. You know, perhaps it is really taking time and effort to make a fantastic experience. You know, maybe you're a restaurant, for example. You know, have a fantastic experience when you sit down, show the, you know, the food in really interesting ways, have a great website, have menus that people care about, be, you know, cognitive of all the experiences that you have within the restaurant. And this is, you know, very design focused, you know, types of things, because when you have a great experience that's design led, you know, word of mouth, you know, is a really, you know, one, it's free. And two, it's one of the most effective ways to actually spread your word is word of mouth. So giving people a really great experience is just, you know, that's just one way to do it, where you don't have to spend, you know, $1 billion of media, you know, to achieve something that's really interesting and fun and people care about. Small brands get tons and tons of passion all the time. And it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of effort. And sometimes, you know, like I started to say before, you know, you don't have to market to 8 billion people. You know, you can market to 100,000 people and really get your message out to the people who are going to matter to you. You know, mm-hmm. are you a local restaurant? Well, you know, you might only need a very targeted approach towards a small amount of people. And it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg to, you know, get your message out to those people.
So you bring up design, and I want to dig into this a little bit, because you have a background in art and design, and I'm curious to know what brought you into the marketing advertising world to begin with.
Yeah, so my degree is actually in art with a graphic design focus. So diploma says art, and I learned how to really think very creatively about problem solving, you know, mm-hmm. especially when I was in college. So the first thing that I actually found straight out of college was, you know, innovation, so I was the kind of student when I was building a portfolio where I was doing a lot of things by hand. I still illustrate a lot with collage and things like that. So it's a little bit of a non-traditional design portfolio coming out of college. But there's definitely a lot of thought that goes into my work. There's definitely a lot of things that are highly considered to tell a message. Mm-hmm. And what that related, you know, to me, or what related me to innovation, is just careful thinking and portraying things in new ways. And my first, you know, couple jobs was very much consumer centric innovation, working with companies like Procter & Gamble or General Electric. Nike was one of them. You know, I did some innovation work with them. And from that, you know, I always kind of wanted to say, okay, what does this really look like in real life? So kind of took the idea of the innovation thinking and said, well, what's the best way to use this type of thought and put it into real life and design things? And the answer to that, you know, for me was, you know, get into branding. Mm-hmm. So I always like to tell people, so there's three partners here at C90. You know, we have, you know, a chief strategy officer. I'm a chief creative officer, and we have another chief creative officer. And the way that we signify between the two CCOs is he's very executional, and I sit perfectly in between the partners. I'm really good at taking, you know, a strategy and making it into a visual language that's beautiful and really tells a story for somebody. So that's kind of how I ended up there. I mean, I'm, you know, essentially going through about 15 years in a couple of minutes. But yeah, when I landed on branding, I think I found the thing that I'm just, you know, hyper passionate about.
So you were talking about the makeup of the team there, and I'm sort of interested in understanding the process. I mean, for anybody who's, you know, watched Mad Men, for example, where a client is sort of pitched, they're handed the business, and then there's like seemingly no communication with clients. And I can't imagine that's how it actually works. How does it work?
Yeah, there's a lot of communication with clients every day. So, you know, we're a small agency. There's actually seven of us, but we're pretty much location agnostic. You know, we have three people here in Cincinnati full time, and then we have presence in Brooklyn, and we also have presence in Miami. So in Miami, we actually, that's our chief brand officer, and she's working very closely with clients every day to say, okay, what's your problems? What are kind of things that we can help solve, you know, for you? So she has a lot of very deep relationships with, you know, a lot of our clients, and that's what, you know, brings things to our attention, mm-hmm. Brings projects, you know, together and that sort of thing. And then once it, you know, kind of goes over the line, you know, we have strategy, you know, we're a strategy led organization. We always start with, you know, particularly in a visual identity or a brand project, we always position the brand. And that's where, you know, I talked earlier about, you know, the company, the consumer, the, you know, competition and what goes on in culture, that's essentially positioning your brand.
Yeah.
And then once you have everything positioned, you create a design brief to say, what are the messages that we want to portray visually? And then, you know, I come into play, or my partner Emmett comes into play, where we give you all the creative assets that you need, language. We give you, you know, pretty much a whole messaging strategy you know, with our deliverables and say, these are the key images, these are the key messages that you can use going forward. And then, you know, there's obviously implementation after that where, you know, we're creating the things that make you real. You know, maybe it's packaging, maybe it's a website, could be advertising campaigns, could be, you know, any number of things, but we do all the design work as well.
And you mentioned earlier about the particular medium or channels that, you know, small versus big might be using. How does that come into play when you're sort of going through the process you've just described? Do you know where you're going to be communicating with prospective, you know, customers at the point that you're in the creative process?
It's normally in the creative process where we start to figure it out. So when you position yourself and you really understand who your customer is, you can start to make a little, you know, a few assumptions of, okay, if our customer is this, they probably live here. You know, you have to meet them where they're at. You know, if you're looking for people who are looking for a restaurant in Cincinnati, you can't, mm-hmm. you know, run a billboard campaign in Arizona. You know, so you have to figure out, you know, where they're going to be at. And then once you figure out where they're going to be at, that's when you can start to create, okay, they're here. This is the problem that we have. How do you connect that in a really, you know, interesting way? That mostly comes through the around the design process, because then we can, you know, especially if you're a fresh brand, we can at least start to think about, okay, well, this is what your design is going to look like. Maybe this would be appropriate as, I don't know, an Instagram campaign, or maybe this would be appropriate as a billboard campaign, or, you know, you can go on. I mean, obviously when you have different messages, some medium are better for others than other medium, and you have to just kind of figure that out as you go along.
Yeah. So you've been doing this work for a while, but the internet has existed for the majority of the time that you've been, you know, in this space. And I imagine it's gained an increasing amount of footprint in terms of where a lot of these communications happen. What is your just general assessment of kind of where dollars get spent the most, and are you seeing trends in one direction or another moving, you know, even more digital, or retreating and going back, or does it depend on, you know, the project?
Well, I mean, we always like to say, like, the right medium for the message is where we would recommend, you know, spending money, right? You know, that obviously changes every time. But, you know, to give you kind of a more general answer, you know, most people come to us and say, I need a digital marketing campaign, you know? So it's like they come to the table with a solution before they ever think about what they're trying to say, mm-hmm. Which, you know, for me, I take that, you know, with a grain of salt and say, okay, well, what are you trying to do? Maybe doing a bunch of Instagram ads is not the best technique to get this message across. You know, so like a lot of people just say, oh, well, you know, we're going to spend a whole bunch of money on social media. It's not always effective. It's very flooded. You know, I don't know if, you know, you like flipping through your Instagram, but boy, there's a lot of ads on there these days, and, you know, they're doing well from an ad revenue standpoint. That's for sure. Yeah. But it's kind of like the de facto, mm-hmm. you know, in a way. And then the other thing that we seem to be seeing quite a bit is the idea of, you know, launching a brand in the D2C space, you know, that's very much like website focused. And obviously you see a lot of, you know, companies that are doing this. There's tons of brands popping up that are doing it really well. Probably still the darling of, you know, marketing right now, you know, as far as D2C goes, maybe mm-hmm. Casper. They've done tons and tons and tons of advertising to promote their product. And, you know, they're a wildly successful company. But it takes a lot to get there. So people yeah. think like, oh, well, they can do it. I can do it. All I have to do is like a bunch of ads and have a great message. Really difficult to do.
I will mention, I was just up in Vancouver, British Columbia, and they had a retail store, Casper. And my wife and daughter were with me, and my daughter comes in and she wanted to try out some of the mattresses. And then she proceeded to ask them about the ads that she had seen, but she was actually identifying the purple ads, not the Casper ads. Luckily, the people in the store had no idea what she was talking about, but You know, I'm not sure how effective the Casper campaign has been, at least in her demographic of 12-year-old girls in the Pacific Northwest.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I can tell you that it's absolutely been effective in growing a lot more competition in the mattress world.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, couldn't you just get like mattresses on President's Day for half price? I mean, that's all I remember, you know, especially like before Casper.
Yeah, totally. Well, this has been fascinating, and to be honest, at the beginning of the conversation, I did you a disservice by painting a picture of the branding world in a negative light, and clearly, you're a practitioner of something that is quite different from what I imagined a lot of the branding and creative agency space is. And so, thanks for sort of opening my eyes to the very thoughtful approach that you take to the work that you do.
Yeah, absolutely, it was a lot of fun.
Indeed. Why don't we chat very briefly about C90 and the types of clients you serve and where people can find out more about you there?
Yeah, so we're C90, and you can definitely find us at c-90.com online. That's our website. And then C_90 Studio on Instagram. You know, we like to tell people that, you know, we work with, you know, businesses of all different shapes and sizes, but we're definitely looking for companies that need a co-conspirator to, you know, create something that, you know, kind of bashes the status quo and creates something that's truly new. And that's the type of people that we're looking to work with.
Well, it's a cool website. There's some really striking visuals and some great detail on some of the work that you do, and some links to some cool video interviews that I watched as well. I will make sure that we have links to C90 for those who are interested in heading on over there. Chris Ritter, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Indeed. Folks, this has been More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from listening to this episode, please pass it on to them. And if you have feedback for us, please leave it over at Apple Podcasts. We greatly appreciate your reviews. Until next time, I'm David Baer, and this is More Perfect Marketing. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.